Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the October 2023 Fall Family Retreat held in Pipestem, West Virginia.
Okay, so the first question everyone asks is, well, what's a pod? And really, in my the type of pods that I'm helping facilitate, they are small co-ops. They're small cooperatives. They're really, if you've been homeschooling a long time, they're just old-fashioned co-ops. They're the way co-ops were when only 2% of the population homeschooled. And now when people think of homeschool co-ops, they generally think of an organization that meets in a church or community center and has 100 or more students, and you pay membership fees and you pay class fees, and the cost can get pretty high for a big family. And pods are in-home cooperatives. So let's talk about myself a little bit and why should we go back to the home for cooperatives? I'm totally sold that this is what we should do, and I'm explain why. So, and Lisa's here. So Lisa and I, our first co-op in Columbia, 2014, something. It was a great co-op, wasn't it? It was a great co-op. And it wasn't a super big one, but we did have to start a business. We had to have business account. We had to do, you were the treasurer, so we had a lot of accounting, money going in and out. We had to rent a facility. We had to get an insurance policy, right? We had to pay taxes. So it's like starting a business, isn't it? It's like starting a business. And for a lot of homeschoolers, I'm going to explain that not only is it hard, there's a lot of reasons why it's not ideal. Which I've learned in the years that followed. But it's usually just not very feasible for most just homeschool moms to be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna take on a business now and I'm gonna run a homeschool co-op so that my kid can have this experience or have these social connections. We'll talk about why a little bit later in my program, what's all involved in that and why we don't do that now. But anyway. One of the things I've realized is that when it comes to what our families need as homeschoolers, or what I should say any family needs, it's circles of connection in their lives. And their most important circle is their family. That's where the most important work is done, as we all know. And then families surround themselves with supports. What's supposed to be our first and most important support is our extended family. However, not all families have strong extended families or even extended families that are close by. And so as Latter-day Saints, we have this beautiful other thing, and we have our church family. And that's our inner, intimate support. These are people that share our values and our religious beliefs, and we come together and serve each other as though we are brothers and sisters. And our children are served and taught in that beautiful environment that is our church. And then we have, but as homeschoolers, sometimes we're like, well, you know, we sometimes still feel a little isolated even in our ward family because we're doing life very differently. And our kids aren't going to public school and they need kids around them and youth around them that are also homeschoolers. And that's what kind of drives us to want to join a homeschool cooperative. And so I think of the homeschool cooperative needing to be another one of the three inner circles. You can't really see this very good on this screen. It looks better on mine. These are three circles. And these are the most important supports. And this one, I call it small group homeschool cooperative. And why do I say small and not large? Because one of the things I learned in my second cooperative that I organized and ran, which was much larger than Sharp, the one that we did in Maryland was twice the size, almost three times the size by the time we closed, was that the larger the group, the larger the organization, the more institutional it starts to feel. Now, we know this in the church. It's why in the church we don't let wards get beyond a certain size. I'm going to propose that the size of the ward is too big for a homeschool cooperative as well. So as it becomes more institutional, it becomes further away from the home, as it becomes further away from that home feeling, that feeling of family, then the friendship connections that are made aren't as strong and aren't as bonding for the children. So as you can see here, people will say, well, don't your kids need to? Oh, so sorry, that's too quickly. So in this small cooperative, you're looking to build a community with very like-minded people. People who share your religious beliefs, your worldview, the kind of people that you could trust teaching your child important things and know and feel comfortable that it's very much an extension of how you would teach them, but with their own talents. Now, why? That sounds very exclusionary to some people. But this concept is that if you think about these circles of community or association that we have around our families, we only invite certain influences into our home. So when you think about the kind of cooperative homeschool group you want, I would like you to think of it like, who would I invite into my home? Who would I invite into my life in an intimate way? Who would I trust with my children? That's who I want to build, and that's what I want to pull around me. And people with similar needs or similar educational philosophies, so that you guys can work very seamlessly and cooperatively together to build the kind of educational supports that work with how you roll, right? As we go through this presentation, that when you do small co-ops the way we're doing them, pods, there can be thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And to meet every single need, to meet every single niche, every single culture, family culture. So then people ask me, well, wait a minute, I want my child to also interact with people who are very different than them. I want them to interact in the world that we live in. I want them to be exposed to diversity of thought or idea or political diversity or even religious diversity. And I'd say, great, there's lots of opportunities for that. I mean, very, very appropriate spaces, such as outdoor academic sports in your community. Community service is a fantastic way for youth and children to associate with people they wouldn't otherwise come in contact with. You could always join large group cooperatives if you wanted that type of an experience. Field trip groups tend to be that way. Of course, I think travel is fantastic. Family travel is a great way to do that. Get politically involved. Do political engagement if you want your children to have some of that. Then there's broader homeschool associations, umbrellas, and all sorts of extracurricular activities. A lot of our homeschoolers go and participate in classes and programs at local community colleges. They're in that situation, they're meeting people in the world. So there's lots of ways that we interact with the world. We don't have to bring them all into our home. We don't have to bring all that into our home. And so when we think about pods, we think about home. This little part here, I says, what is community? So if you've ever read, there's a great book, John Taylor Gatto's book, Dumbing Us Down. One of the things he talks about it is he talks about public school is like a poison. And he talks about the antidote being something he calls community. And when he describes what community is in the book, he's really describing, I thought the entire time I was reading, he's describing church. But what he was describing is what this word comes from. The word community is derived from the Latin meaning the same and shared by all or many, with a combination of Latin prefixes that mean together and performing services. So when you think about community, you're thinking about a group of people who share, there are many people or few, but shared togetherness and service and sameness. They have something in common that's the same. Usually it's a vision or a cause or a worldview or a religious view. And they come together to work and perform services for each other. All right, so this section of my presentation was really designed to be for those who are new to homeschooling and don't know very much about homeschool groups. So there's lots of different kinds of homeschool associations and groups, and there is no standardization in homeschool, and there is no standardization in homeschool groups, and there are no standard terms. So if I were to say to you, I'm going to just give you a general idea really, really fast about the different kinds of words that are used when you're talking to people about homeschooling and you're feeling completely confused about what an association is and co-op is and a pod is and what all this stuff is. Well, first of all, they are not legal terms. So we'll just start right there. Homeschool has so grown and matured that, and in the last 3 or 4 years, so morphed into so many different things that it's hard to define all of these things. So some people have heard of homeschool umbrellas. If you live in Maryland like I do, it's actually a facet of the law, but there's other states where there's no such thing. But it's a private school that provides oversight to homeschoolers, usually. However, I was part of a homeschool association and we called ourselves an umbrella in Omaha, Nebraska. So it's very varied. Homeschool associations usually means broader, looser association of homeschoolers. It could be a Facebook group that's posting regular activities or people are posting what they're doing, or it could be something a little bit more organized that brings a broader homeschool community together for regular events, or a field trip club could be a homeschool association. So large homeschool co-ops, I described at the beginning, they look like they're usually renting public spaces or private spaces like churches. And the people who join them usually pay a membership fee and other fees associated with the co-op. And they often provide courses. Some of them might be core courses like math or English, but most often it's more like the types of educational support type courses where we're going to do science labs and we're going to do hands-on projects for history, or we're going to do art classes and PE classes and stuff like that. The menu of class options for some co-ops can be extremely broad, and for others, smaller ones, more limited. As an example, my first homeschool co-op, I think at our height, maybe we were 75 students or something like that, and we were running 3 classes per age group per session, our 10-week sessions, and each age group could choose between 2 or 3 classes each hour. So I mean, I can't remember how that was, 35 classes, 6, you know, times, whatever. So I mean, it was, and the families would sign up, you know, they'd pay their membership fees, and then they'd go into a catalog and sign up for the classes they wanted for their kids, and then pay class fees on top of that. And a large family might spend something like $400 to $500 per semester to participate, almost $1,000 a year. And a small family is much less, $150 to $300 a year, or something like that. So large homeschool co-ops are kind of this way. The one I started and then managed in Omaha, Nebraska, we at our peak had about 175 students. And we always had more people wanting to join. It was like it was constantly expanding, almost to the point that and just to kind of highlight that, I was trying to do what we were doing at Sharp in this much bigger organization, and in the first one I explained, Sharp, which is Columbia, Maryland, where we're at 75 kids, our focus was to have everything be as project-based and hands-on and fun and interactive as possible. And that's what I really wanted with my second project as well, and I really tried to keep it that way. But as it got bigger, it really did become so much, much harder to keep it so dynamic. So that's the problem as you get larger. An example would be another co-op in the same city, a Christian cooperative in the same city, had 600 homeschoolers enrolled in their co-op. They had two different days of the week. They had so many different classes, class catalogs. Got very expensive. Part of me started, I went for a few classes to their co-op and thought, okay, you know what? I think this is just public school. I think we've gotten back. This is just institutional school. I didn't homeschool for this. All right, so drop-off school options. These are popping up more and more and more, and there's lots of controversy about them. But there are products that are popping up, organizations that are popping up who are saying, you know, bring your kids to us and we'll educate them. So they're essentially quasi-private schools. But then there's other things like, you know, community colleges who are expanding to homeschoolers. In fact, in Southern Maryland, they have from 5 years old and up now, College of Southern Maryland does homeschool classes. And a lot of parents take advantage of that, and they just drop their kids off. Now, that's, you know, a public institution, and they're educating kids. So what is that called? Public school, right. And then we have, we get to small group cooperatives and pods. I wanted to kind of go over this just a little bit. So where did the word pods come from? So I'll tell you, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm running a large Latter-day Saint homeschool cooperative in the city, and we had we're serving at this point almost all of the Latter-day Saint homeschoolers in the city. It's a big spread-out city, and then the pandemic happens, and the church that we're renting wants us to follow rules that just are not what we want to do, aren't conducive to what we're trying to accomplish. And we can't meet in the kind of group numbers that we have anyway, and so essentially we are shut down, right? And we cannot meet anymore. And so my board, we form another organization. We called an association. We called it Haven, and it was a umbrella under our same 501c3 for helping all those now disconnected families to reconnect in a different way. And we have all their information. We know them really, really well. We've been planning for them for years, classes, and you know, you just get to really know the needs, the special needs, their educational philosophies. And we have the ability to start connecting them or splitting up into small groups based on their regions, their needs, their kids' ages, their educational special needs, and all these different things. And we know certain people that have homes that could accommodate small group co-ops, and have the kind of will to do it, and so we start suggesting these pods. We decide to call them pods, and then help facilitate them getting these pods going and using what we knew about organizing co-ops. It was fantastic. We used the word pods because I was reading an article in the paper about California, and in California they had completely shut down the public schools completely. They threw all the kids, this did not happen in Nebraska. Schools did not close. They just did really crazy things at school, but they did not close them. But they shut down all the schools in California, and they put all the kids online. And parents in California, a lot of them were like, I don't want my child to learn this way. And they started forming what were called micro schools. They were, actually, I think it might be the wave of the future, but there's a lot of controversy about them. But this is what they would do. They're in the community, they're in a neighborhood, right? And they would have all been at their neighborhood school. So you're like, okay, on my street, there's three or four moms that have a third grader. And I got a third grader. Let's get together and see if we can bring in, I don't know, four or five more. And we'll sit down as those eight families or nine families, we'll just sit down at the kitchen table at my house, and we'll come up with an educational plan for our kids, and we'll cooperatively educate our kids. And in some cases, they would go so far as to take a teacher who really doesn't want to be teaching online either and say, we're going to pay you. You want to do a one-room schoolhouse teaching program? We'll pay your salary. In fact, we're going to pay you better than what the public school paid you. And they split the cost of the teacher's salary between all of the parents. And they've got a micro private school like that. And they've got a teacher teaching all of their kids. And the state hated it. Oh my goodness, Maryland hates that idea too. Because they can't control the teachers that way. all of a sudden the teachers could be independent contractors, and that would be really, really bad for the state. So that was what people in California were calling pods, and so it's a little bit of a charged name. I was in Nebraska, I didn't like, we're going to use pods because it's kind of cute.
Dolphins.
Yes, and whales, and you know, they form these little pods, and the moms will go out and eat and forage or whatever, and then they'll come back, and the like two moms will watch all the kids. Yeah, that's really funny. That's what whales do. But also you have like the peas in a pod, you know, isn't that so cute? So I also thought, this goes back to my mentor over here. So when Lisa and I were, when we were doing our co-op in Columbia, we chose Sharp as our name, which that sharp sounded so sharp, you know? And then we were like, hey, can we make something of the letters? That came the second part, right? I said, hey, you can with PODS, Personalized Organizations for Development and Sociality. I'm awesome, I was joking. So it's like we planned it that way, but no, I didn't. So here was the vision. PODS would be more personal, closer friendships, more informal and flexible. People gathered under common values, shared goals, that there would be reasonable to no cost, as close to that as I could get it, maximum engagement, service, and sociality, and easy to start and maintain. Those are my goals when we did PODS. All right. I should really said something before we went on to this one, and that is that one of the things a lot of homeschool mothers don't understand, and if you've done homeschool co-ops, you do, is that starting from what I just described as more formal homeschool co-ops, which for a lot of people is the only kind they know, you take on a lot of legal liability. I didn't even realize the extent of the legal liability she started taking on until I did my second one. And we were in Omaha. We'd been open a year. I think it was the second year. And a family came to us and wanted to join the co-op. And they had a daughter, but they wanted the daughter to participate in the co-op as a boy, as a son. And they wanted the whole co-op to welcome the child in that way, and to do that and associate in that way. And this was difficult for me because I had 100 plus families, and I couldn't ask them all to do that. It didn't feel like I could ask them to do that. And so I had a talk with the woman and explained to her why I couldn't do that. I said they were welcome so long as their daughter would just participate as a daughter. She could wear what she wanted, but she needed to participate as a girl. And then we were served with a lawsuit. We were served with a lawsuit. And I found that, you know, and all of a sudden I found out that, you know, the public accommodation clauses in most cities and states can go after private organizations like homeschool co-ops. Now, you know, HSLDA helped us out, and we, in the end, it was all right. In the end, we didn't go all the way to court. But I learned a lot about legal liability. I learned a lot about what's going on in our world, and I thought, man, this, beyond all of the establishing a 501c3, which at least I wasn't personal business, so I didn't have that liability. So, you know, I was incorporated in my state. I had to follow the corporation rules in my state. So that's just a lot. It's too much, I think, for most homeschoolers. It's not necessary. It's not necessary to get your kids what you need. So how to start your own pod? Well, it's magnificently easy, believe it or not. We're just going to go through it. I'm going to show you how. All you need to do is start with a plan. What's my purpose? What function is my homeschool, what function is it going to perform in my homeschool? Is it going to be primarily social? Is it going to be social meetups with other homeschoolers? Do we want to have some sort of academic component? Are we going to have classes that have an academic aim or focus? Are we going to be completely arts-based? There's people who do that. Some do music-based ones, some do theater-based ones. Some do sports-based ones, okay? Do I have special needs? Is my child neurodiverse, and maybe putting them together with other kids who are such? Maybe that's what I want to do and try to grab that together. Is it a youth group? Do I want to mainly be attracting teenagers? What's my approach? Are we going to focus on a certain type of curriculum or homeschool philosophy? Or are we going to be a little bit broader? Now, I will say that you can, with a pod, you can do anything, because listen, if you love classics education, you can find 10 people who like classics education. You can find six people that like that kind of education, that like Charlotte Mason, or who want to do the well-educated hard, or whatever. I don't do that because I'm more focused on the kinds, their values and the kind of people I want to gather together, not what they're doing educationally, what curriculums they've chosen, or that we share the same curriculums. So instead, my focus has always been on things we can do together that enrich all of our efforts collectively without getting into the curriculum part. We're just all going to go our own way curriculum-wise. That's not what we're going to do. So write a vision statement. Now, usually you should do this once you've gather two or three people, four or five people. So it can start with just a couple people that you know. Get together and come up with your concept and come up with your vision. And so start there, and then you'll gather more, okay? So example, this was the vision that we wrote for Homegrown Pod, is what we call it. The kids named it, by the way. We wrote it after we had the kids. So the vision we wrote was to provide social hands-on learning in a home-like environment, to learn in a Christ-centered way that provides our children opportunities to connect with other children and have fun while learning in a variety of subject areas: creative arts, STEM, history and cultural studies, health, life skills, and nature. So that's what we decided our goal was. And we do that with every class. Every single thing we do, we're like, is there a project? Is it hands-on? Are they having fun? Are you using a workbook? Get rid of it. So the kids just have lots of fun when they come to pod. I wish you guys could see my pictures. They're not really showing up. This is a picture of them doing a human knot on the front lawn of my house here. Now, when you meet together with your first little group and you come up with your vision, you're going to need to decide where you're going to meet. And some of the pods in Southern Maryland that I've helped start couldn't decide at first. No one really was sure they wanted to open up their home at first with people they didn't know very well yet. And some of them I was bringing people together based on a survey I had put out. So they met outside for the fall at different parks and stuff. And then as they got to know each other and work together, they started to move in to the home. So that worked for them. That didn't happen with me. I had a house that I knew would work for a co-op. I said, we're doing it here, everyone come here. And so we just met at my house. So, yes, go ahead.
Okay. You said choose wisely. Do you bet?
Oh, yeah.
How?
Oh, yeah. So, and at the end, the program, this slideshow will be, and the notes will be posted. And at the bottom, you'll see some links. So I have and you can always contact me too, and I can help you with it, but which is in there too. But I have a member application for our homeschool pod. And it's very, first of all, upfront, it explains a lot to them. And I have paragraphs that are designed to send some people packing, meaning they would read it and go, I'm not going to join that group. And it's not offensive. It just says something like this. We are a Christian-based cooperative. We believe in traditional family, meaning that we believe in traditional marriage, purity of human sexuality, and biological gender. Those are usually some of the things in our society right now that's just like the chasm. It's just like it's happened in every single faith, not every single church. It's happened to every single church, all through the Christian community. So that's stressed in the application. It kindly says that we're gathering people of like mind because it's important to us that this is an intimate in-home association, and that this is important in this kind of association. But it goes on later in the application to ask some questions that are leading, that give you an idea of a person's religious beliefs, values, and their goals, what they're looking for.
We have an application for our co-op too, but then we still get people who are really crappy at teaching.
Oh, wait a minute. That okay. word is a very negative word. Let's rephrase. Let's rephrase this. These are parents with a sincere desire to educate their children and don't yet know how to teach. And it's an opportunity for them to be mentored. Now, what I would tell you is that in a small in-home cooperative, think of it as a small ministering group. You're going to be very closely associated with other mothers, and you're going to have the opportunity to say, I am here for you. I am going to help you learn how to develop your classes. I'm going to help you we're all going to help each other to give each other ideas. I've had many, many a mom, and this is not just in this pod, but over, I mean, how many years now have I been doing cooperatives? 10. Who come in as nervous as everything, just nervous and really not wanting to teach. I don't want to teach. I don't know how to teach. You know, I have, that happens. I'm positive and I say, I understand. It's intimidating. I totally understand. So maybe for this first session, you're just going to assist. But while you're assisting, I want you to just watch and learn. And then I always say things like, in this group, we are not going to judge each other. We are not going to put the pressure on you. We are here to help. And your best efforts are welcome. Because I found that when you do that, it works. They open up and they start to teach. Now, they have to show up. So you probably have also run across situations where people join and they just don't come and they drop the ball. So that has to be understood that to be a member, you have to show up and you have to do your part. You have to, I mean, sure, kids will get sick occasionally. We understand that. But you've got to have kind of a threshold of attendance requirement. And I have that. And so if they're not showing up, I will contact them. I will lovingly say, you know, I think maybe this isn't working for your family. I'm sorry for that. We would love having you guys here. But you're not here very much, and we need you to be here. And so we've let people go who don't show up. But if they're showing up and if they're participating, then we can help them learn to teach. I have lots of this pod that I've been doing this is our third year. And I've had every year new families, mothers who were in their first year homeschooling or their second year homeschooling were so intimidated. And right now, they're all teaching great classes. They're all just doing great. So you're going to have a mix. You're going to have some experienced moms and some inexperienced moms, and all of your experienced moms, just take them in your arms. Take them in your arms and just love them, and they'll get better. Try to have them teach to their talents as well. I don't have a lot of time to go into all the nitty-gritty as to how you choose which classes to teach. We do it. We did it at the beginning by just doing themes and then letting themed unit studies, letting the moms choose specifically what to teach and how to teach based on their own interests And then as we got going, like that next year, we could start taking kids' requests and start working in kids' interests and stuff like this. Always, always having the moms sign up for what they want to teach. All right. So we talked about application form. Here was the wording. We're an in-home Christian cooperative in Southern Maryland. And then it says, our members are traditional Christians with strong convictions. We hold traditional and biblical views of marriage, gender, and sexuality. Very simple, very straightforward. Not, there are people who can take offense to that, but it's not designed to give offense. Then, of course, tells them what our structure and so forth. As they go later in the form, there's more information. You need to come up with a day, a time. When are we going to meet? Where are we going to meet? Costs, let's do this real fast because people are going to want to know this. We don't do costs. It's liberating. You know, we've been through. I don't do costs. This is what we do. There is no membership fee, and there are no class fees. Your part is the part you put in. Your time and the money that you invest in the classes you teach at POD. That's what it costs you. And everybody's putting in their best efforts in the classes they teach. And everybody's teaching. Okay, not every class you teach is going to cost the same amount of money. Some of the classes you teach is going to be relatively free. And still very creative and fun. So other classes are going to be more expensive.
The kids have to get,
you talk to the,
set.
Yeah, you talk, you just, we have a WhatsApp group, constantly chatting with each other, constantly posting pictures.
So there are costs, just not as the
we are not collecting money. We are not collecting money. We do not open a bank account. We do not incorporate. We do not create a business. When we started up, I said, I need everyone in the pod to get one folding chair per child from your house, buy it, get it secondhand, whatever, label it, put your name on it, bring it to my house. We'll store it at my house. You leave the pod, you take them with you. We don't, pod's not going to own those chairs. We're just going to store them at my house. Everybody's got a chair. We collected folding tables. Anybody got a folding table they'll donate for the school year and put their name on it? Okay, great. We had the folding tables we needed. Do I move some of my furniture around each week? Yep. So that I can get everybody in the library and I can get everybody in the dining room and I can get everybody in the, I have a big basement, so we divide that up. Okay, do a lot of outdoors because I have 8 acres, so we do a lot of outdoor. But, you know, if things come up, we do some field trips, we'll collect some money. You know, we'll have someone organize the field trip and collect the money. Do it through PayPal, friends and family, like you're doing it with a friend. So here's the thing. The government can't control who you invite into your home. They can't regulate you. They can't sue you. And they can't tell you what to do. To the government, what I do on Wednesdays, it's just a social club. It's just a get together with friends. All right. I have run out of time. I had some more slides here that you guys could look at. This was a schedule.
Keep going.
This is a schedule. I have provided links to templates. I've also provided my contact information, and I can send you. Listen, I've been organized and running co-ops for a decade. So every single one I've done, from Sharp in Columbia with Lisa Larson, to Foundations of Learning, to Haven, to Pods, to I've done a lot of documents, right? I run everything on Google Docs, and I have lots and lots of organizational templates that can help you. In fact, my current one is just called our Pod Plan. It has everything the pod needs to operate in one document, one sheet. Well, there's tabs.
And that's all on the website?
It's all on, yes, I actually, because I do this in Southern Maryland, I do run my own pod, but the other thing I'm doing is I act as a facilitator to help area homeschoolers start their own. And so I've created a whole template folder with all of my organizational templates blank and ready to be filled in and used. And I can provide that to anybody free. It's just a Google folder filled with templates. So as far as making it sustainable, just know your limits. Start small and get bigger. Okay, we can talk more after this if you have any more questions, but I've got to stop. It's been fun. Thank you, guys.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.